The Feast of Christ the King, which we celebrate today, has a pretty interesting history. It was made in observance of the Church in 1925 by Pope Pius XI, who was concerned by the growing secularism and nationalism in Italy and abroad. He wanted to remind non-religious leaders, especially dictators like Mussolini, that their authority was transitory and relative and vulnerable. Corruption, denigration of the media, demonization of people with mixed heritage, all of these tactics might amass power in the short term, but ultimately, in the light of more eternal truths, they would fail. That was the message. And today, the Feast of Christ the King still points to ultimate authority and ultimate truth, which belong not to temporal things, but to eternal things. In the Gospel today, Jesus tells Pilate, "For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth will listen to my voice." And that truth was summarized for us today in the opening collect. God's will is to restore all things, liberating people from what divides them and enslaves them so that they can be free and reunited in grace. And we trust this restoration and liberation is embodied in Jesus Christ, the one we follow in the way of love. That's what we are observing and underlining today. In the long span of history, though, the political realities of the early 20th century were hardly unique, right? Just listen to the apocalyptic readings today from Daniel and Revelation, which were written for communities dealing with oppressive leaders and persecution of minority religious groups a long time ago. The first reading comes from the book of Daniel, the only full-blown apocalypse in the Old Testament. It was written in the 2nd century BCE for people struggling under the thumb of a foreign autocrat. Daniel's vision that we heard reveals God's promise to end suffering and to restore justice through a new ruler. He said, "As I watched, I saw one like a human being coming from the clouds of heaven. The Ancient One gave him dominion and glory and kingship that shall not pass away or be destroyed." Then our second reading comes from the Revelation to John, the only full-blown apocalypse in the New Testament. It was written in the 1st century CE, so 300 years after Daniel, for a marginalized and persecuted group of Christians. John's vision names Christ as the one coming to bring freedom and a new kingdom. "Look, he is coming with the clouds. Every eye will see him, even those who pierced him. To him be glory and dominion forever and ever." For many of us, we hear the word apocalypse and think of cataclysmic events like nuclear war or an alien invasion. But that's not the kind of apocalypse that we're talking about. When it comes to Scripture, an apocalypse is a vision, a revelation, a realization that lifts the cover of something to disclose what was concealed beneath, that was always there, but was hidden. And these visions are usually of divine mysteries that offer insight into how the universe works or the destiny of the world. For the people who first heard these visions, it would have been like a splash of cold water a reset, to be reminded that above and beyond the chaos of this world is God's will for justice, reconciliation, and wholeness. For thousands of years, maybe since women and men could form the thought that goes with the feeling, we have also longed for that truth. The truth that grounds us in ultimate reality, the one who is and who was and who is to come. The books of Daniel and Revelation use vivid imagery, like the ancient one on his throne of fiery flames with steam erupting. And these images would have been familiar with people in ancient times. That would be what pointed them to this sense of transcendent divine power. But for us postmodern listeners, it can be a little jarring. What do we do with that? So I ask you, where do we see the longing for ultimate things, the transcendent truth today? Where do we find acknowledgement of God's presence and power? At the beginning of November, my husband and I spent a week in Iceland. It's not such an odd thing to do. The weather is similar to Seattle's, and it is so beautiful. It was the third time we'd been there, but still I was stunned by the volcanic geography, the immense waterfalls, the geothermal geysers, and the powerful wind that was always blowing off the Atlantic Ocean. It all had a way of stilling the mind and recentering the heart. We were there to attend a music festival in Reykjavik that showcases hundreds of bands from throughout the world. It was also the week of the midterm elections. So in addition to immersing ourselves in music and the natural beauty, we followed the election results on our smartphones. We cared deeply about the outcomes, but we also took heart in the creativity and passion around us. And there was something about that distance that was really helpful in putting things in perspective. My favorite artists were the Icelandic ones, like Ilya and Ólafur Arnalds and Junius Mæland. I'm no expert, but I heard a distinctive sound in Icelandic music that goes beyond genre or instruments. To me, it seems like it evokes the song of the Earth's volcanic expansion, or the northern lights that pulse across the night sky, or the fierce wind that seems to come right out of the deep. It is stirring and calming and grounding. One night we went to hear the singer-songwriter Ásgeir, whose sound is described as ethereal melody and melancholic meditation. The show is in a 120-year-old Lutheran church in downtown Reykjavik. It was a simple space built on a budget and to withstand the wind, with hard wooden pews, bare walls, but an elegant pulpit. Despite 10 other venues, the church was standing room only 30 minutes before the show. And we were lucky to find seats in the back row of the balcony. I couldn't see the musicians, but I could hear them. And I could see the faces of so many concert goers in front of me. There were people from all over the world, so many languages, varied ages, and only a small fraction could understand the Icelandic words in the songs. But over the course of the hour, their bodies stilled and relaxed, many with their faces tilted up and their eyes closed. Their expressions reminded me of that unguarded and holy repose that I see on people's faces when they come forward for communion. Throughout the space, there was a palpable sense of reverence, connection, and contemplation of ultimate things. The church held it all, as it had for generations. The Feast of Christ the King asks bluntly, what do you turn to for ultimate reality? What is your ultimate truth? While our ancestors may have looked to fiery apocalyptic symbols of divine power to point to the answer for them, we live in a time where these images are more likely found in video games or action films. But still, like our ancestors, we too long to know and to live out God's will for justice and reconciliation and wholeness. We long for Christ, the name for the transcendent within everything in the universe. I wonder if a sense of this ultimate reality of the transcendence of God for us is found away from these multi-sensory images, in quiet and in stillness and in open listening. That is the invitation of Advent, which begins next Sunday. Today is the last day of the church year, and we begin again next week when we enter the season of quiet and stillness and waiting. So come this evening to the Advent event. Come here and gather and be reset in community. Learn practices that will open spaces in your lives to receive that ultimate truth born again among us at Christmas. I'll see you there.